Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was young.
Hello and welcome to Real Recovery. Bill and George, Brian on the board. We've got a great show for you tonight. An amazing show, actually. This is going to be a story I think it's really going to get your attention and hold you for the entire hour in a riveted sort of way. George, I think it's going to be a great story tonight.
Oh, can't wait, Bill.
Yep.
I never can, but I got a special feeling about tonight.
Yeah, me too. So our guest, Rebecca, is going to be joining us in just a few minutes. But here on Real Recovery, if you're new to the show and you are just finding out about Faith Radio, maybe because you're in the Rapid City area or parts of Wyoming and you've just joined the network, welcome. We talk about a recovery from addiction, and there is one higher power, and that's Jesus Christ, and we make no apologies for that. George and I love talking about stories of transformation. George also has 38 years of sobriety from addiction, and he also is a big fan, as am I, of step work. We always think of that as kind of the calisthenics of keeping your recovery program strong. Did I say that well, George?
You know, it was great. I never liked the word calisthenics. I don't like the word exercise, and I certainly don't like the word work. But you're exactly right. We need to get some delayed gratification of doing what we need to do to get what we want to have.
Yes. Yeah, so on the show, what we do every week is before the guest comes on, we do talk about one of the 12 steps. They're all based in scripture. So no need to be afraid of them. They come from a place of a biblical understanding. I think the first one, George, is the one that can throw people off a little bit when it talks about, you know, you're powerless over drugs and alcohol. And is it the third step that talks about the higher power?
Yeah, we made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood mm-hmm. him. And of course, we understand him to be Jesus. And I always like the first three steps. I like all 12, but I can't do it. He can do it. I'm going to let him do it. Really summarizes what these steps are. But when we make a decision to turn our life over to Christ, Bill, that's not a small deal. But I had some, I believe, insight from the Holy Spirit on this week. And you and I try not to ask people to do anything we're not doing. We're in Bible studies. We pray. We work out. And in our Bible study this week, we're doing an N.T. Wright Bible study, or guys like me call him Tom Wright. But we were talking about John 11 when Lazarus died. And I wanted to read a little bit and show you how this ties into step three, Bill. I think it's really, really nice, if I may.
You may.
Now, Jesus goes back and sees Mary. And we start in verse 32 of chapter 11. Now, when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. Okay. Now, you could take that and go, well, he's sad because he died. He knows he's going to raise him back to life. The important thing here for me as a recovery guy and a Christian, Jesus is right there with us. When you're hurting, he's going to join you in your hurt. He's going to join you. And you're not alone on this. And when we start off in recovery, we kind of feel like we are alone because we've alienated just about everything and everybody that we valued. But if you ask God to come into your heart and take charge of your life, he'll join you in your walk.
Mm-hmm.
You'll trudge the road of happy destiny with the Lord Jesus, Bill. And he doesn't just join us in our victory. He makes that possible, but he's going to walk with you all the way. And that verse really touched me this week of you're never alone. I'm not going to start singing when you walk through a storm, hold your head up high. But, mm-hmm. you know, that's kind of the feeling there, Bill. And I know for me, when I first went to an accountability group and there were other people that shared stuff that I was going through, I realized I wasn't alone. It was kind of Jesus with some flesh on it. Mm-hmm. Very important.
Yeah, when you come to saving faith in Christ, you will have a confidence that God will keep you. He'll never leave you. He'll never forsake you. And nothing will ever separate you from his love. And you will be marked with a seal guaranteeing your inheritance. You'll be saved. You will one day be resurrected and conformed to his son, Jesus. You are blameless in his sight. You are God's possession. And you're a new creation if you've been living with addiction of any kind. And you've got an old life. You want to take that life off and have God help you through that addiction. You have come to the right place here at World Recovery. We'll always do our very best to encourage you and build you up in your faith, and also let you hear stories of transformation that will give you hope and encouragement, just like the one we've got coming up tonight, George.
Oh, fabulous, Bill. Yeah, and we missed everybody last week on Super Bowl week, but I had a real good one. I got a new TV this week. So we got that going for us. Promises are coming true.
Yeah. So if you have any questions about your recovery, you can always email us. You can email me at bill@myfaithradio.com. We are always hoping that you will first come to saving faith in Christ. We are hoping and praying that you always can put your addiction behind you and be free from the slavery of addiction and sin, and that you will join fellowship and find accountability and find a group that you can be a part of, that you can be encouraging others and have others be encouraging you. I think that's such a critical part of having a good, strong recovery.
Yep. You know, the first word in the steps, Bill, is we. And I think the big word in addiction is alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big change right there. This is all true, and it happens, and you're going to hear a story tonight that'll reinforce for you that God can do anything. With God, all things are possible.
Yeah. All right. So we'll take a little break, and then we'll bring on our guest, Rebecca, tonight. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. So glad you're with us tonight. We'll be right back.
Can get it wrong and still think that it's all right.
Welcome back to Real Recovery. It is so glad. We're so glad to be with you tonight, and we're excited to bring our guest on, Rebecca, in just a minute. But George, this is the first for Real Recovery in the 10 years we've been doing this. We have never had a brother-sister combination back-to-back.
Don't recall it, no.
No, I don't think so. This is the first. If you remember last week, Paul John was our guest, and now Sister Rebecca is on tonight.
Very cool.
Yeah, so it's exciting. So, Rebecca, welcome to Real Recovery.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah. Okay, let's first start off with the sibling situation. Paul John was great, by the way. Is he younger or older than you?
He's older than
He's
me
older.
By 5 years.
5 years. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. So you've got how many other siblings?
So three besides him and I.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. And tell us what your understanding was growing up in your family. We heard your brother's interpretation of it. What was yours like?
So there was a lot of, how do I say it? You know, dysfunction, I don't think is quite the word. A lot of it was pretty blurry for me as a young, as a small girl, as far as the marriage between my dad and mom. I was pretty young when they divorced, so I don't remember a whole lot of that. But there was definitely, you know, substance use early on for me, living with my mom, her being a single parent, visiting my dad on the weekends, a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. So you as a young girl even understood that there was tension in the house?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, that was clear.
Yeah.
And did that create a feeling of insecurity? What does a little girl think when there's fighting and mom and dad aren't getting along?
Yeah, most definitely. A lot of insecurities, a lot of feeling in the way more mm-hmm. than anything. A lot of, being helpless or powerless to life and to any situation, being young and in the middle of it. My mom had a lot of, I don't want to say house parties, but there's a lot of partying going on mm-hmm. when I was a young girl. And oftentimes being a small kid, where you're in the way.
Sure.
You're in the way of the partying. You're in the way of the people, the fun, so.
You're a distraction.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Not in the way because you live there. You belong there.
Right.
But you're distracting the adults from doing what they wanted to do.
Right.
Okay. So when you did the weekends back and forth, a little bit at mom's, mm-hmm. a little bit at dad's.
Yep. So mom had us, Monday through Friday and then every other weekend. And that was one thing that I do remember, being really, really excited for that other weekend, the every other, excited. My dad's going to come. I'm going to go to my dad's house this weekend. I'm going to my dad's house. And, from the age that I start to remember was right around the time when, I know there was substance use going on for a while with him. But it really, the picture of recovery really started. I remember being in Al-Anon. Right, Alateen, Alakid, mm-hmm. Alatot, when I'd go with my dad on the weekends and they'd do these fun functions and we'd go camping and we'd go, swimming and to these meetings and to the parks and picnics and stuff through AA. And my mom didn't do AA. She didn't do any of that stuff. So when I know it's dad's weekend, we're going to go do something fun. And that lasted for a while and it was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you were exposed to those activities and you mm-hmm. saw the joy of people having a good time and not having any kind of alcohol or any substances whatsoever.
Yep.
All right. George, you must have the next question ready to go.
No, I actually was going to compliment you, Bill. And this is a first back-to-back in 10 years. So it's the compliment to Bill from George, probably. But, I think that's a really important feature. A lot of us grew up with the example of when the liquor cart came out, everybody got happy and had a good time. To go out with your family on a chemically free weekend and have fun activities really sets the mark for your kids.
Yeah, I feel like, it was a big deal. There was a lot of confusion at the same time for me with that because, on one hand, I have nothing known of that life with my mom drinking and, the instability of moving from grandma's house to the trailer park, to grandma's house to here, to grandma's house to there, and then going with my dad on the weekends. And then, just when I would start to get comfortable with even a pattern of inconsistent, one week it's good and then on the weekend it's this way. Some things I started seeing also the other side of, I wouldn't say the other side of recovery, but the other side of the struggles of an addict or an alcoholic where, we're all of a sudden one weekend we go to dad's and we're at a camp out and then the next weekend, there's high tension between, he's relapsed, right? Mm-hmm. So some people say that's a part of recovery, that relapses are a part of recovery. But as a young kid, you don't know that.
Right.
You just know that, everything's good. Everything was fine last week. And what happened now? And there's this big letdown, a lot of confusion, and it's tough to comprehend. And so you start to then question every situation you go into. Is this going to be okay? How long is this going to last? Right. So.
All right. So when did you start to have your first experiment with alcohol or any kind of drug? How old were you and how did it start?
So my first experience with alcohol, I used to joke about it. actually with my younger sister because she was there. And, you know, my mom would say, go get us a beer, honey, go get us a beer. So I'd run and I'd get a beer, get two beers. And my mom had this boyfriend when we were growing up that drank liquor with pop and not beer. And so when I was about 10 years old, he said, you know, I'm going to teach her how to make a drink, right? And so we went
You're
in. 10. I'm 10 years old. Went into the cabin and he said, you fill the glass up with ice. You know, you pour this much liquor in it and then you fill the rest with pop and you stir it. And if you taste it, and all you taste is liquor, add a little pop. If all you taste is pop, add a little liquor. So by the end of that night, I had had plenty of both.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just being, you know, I remember when it kicked in, the feeling. And all of a sudden, I wasn't a distraction or in the way I felt like I was a part of, right? I was doing what the adults were doing. I could be in the party, and now I get it, you know, and just really feeling like, this is, you know, I'm doing what the grown-ups do.
I have arrived.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yep. Needless to say, at 10 years old, your body doesn't handle alcohol at all. And so I was very sick. And the part I joke with my younger sisters, I'm like, I love you. I love you. And, you know, we'd go back and forth for years after that. She'd make fun of me because apparently I was a very lovey 10-year-old after adding alcohol.
Mm.
So
that was your response.
Yeah.
With a little alcohol in you, you got very emotional.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So you got sick. You're 10. Did mom know that the boyfriend was teaching you? Was
mm-hmm.
that okay?
Yep.
So that was under her eyes and her vision.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So then did you get to feel like an adult again? How much longer before you did that again?
Yeah. So, you know, and it's not uncommon. I've heard other people share similarities with this, is that, you know, once you first feel that that escape from reality, that you know, I fell in love with it. I was like, you know, I can forget things. I can, you know, fit in with everybody else that I'm around, because that was the norm. Like, for me, as a child growing up, the norm was, like, people getting drunk, people smoking marijuana, was people, you know what I mean? It was always, the smell was always coming from one room or the other as far as the marijuana went. And so, like, and then I recognized that smell even at my dad's house in between his short periods of sobrieties, or, you know, whichever it was. And like, that was normal life for me. And then being in the bars as a young girl, my mom used to, I remember singing karaoke at the bar in Clayton, Wisconsin.
The famous Clayton, Wisconsin.
The famous Clayton, mm-hmm. Wisconsin. I remember being 10, 11, 12 years old, singing karaoke. Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog, you know, all the oldies but goodies. And people at the bar, like, buying me pop and giving me quarters. And then, you know, I'd be sneaking sips of, you know, drinks mm-hmm. at a young age. And trying to just fit in. Like I said, it was a very normal lifestyle for me at the time.
So, George, have you ever karaoke Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog?
No, but I was thinking that Clayton, Wisconsin's kind of become our Lake Wobegon here on Real Recovery. You know, it's interesting. She talked about getting the feeling, and then you go to seeking that feeling afterwards. And she talked about, you know, physiologically not being able to handle that at 10. You're not going to handle it emotionally either. Right. And I'm interested to see how this turns out.
Definitely. You know, I felt like it just opened the door to, you know, and there's the peer pressures of life, right? And the experimental moments in a child's growing up. And it just really opened that door wide for me. I wasn't afraid of it. I wasn't afraid of it. And so going from a child to an adolescent, that lifestyle, like I said, it was normal. I mean, it wasn't until we moved back to Minnesota that I had a friend who lived a couple trailers down, and I'd go over to her house and her mom would hang my jacket up outside because it smelled so strong, like cigarettes from mm-hmm. being in the bars.
Mm.
You know, in the 90s, you know, you could smoke in the bars. And, she'd hang my coat up, and her family went to church and they had dinner together, and they weren't doing the same things that my family was. And, you know, I tried giving her a Spice Girls CD. Her mom said she can't have that, you know. And then I started thinking, are they weird or am I? There's something, you know, there's a disconnect here. What's happening? But it really, like I said, it made me not afraid to experiment with things. You know, I fell into my, you know, as a young teenage girl, I was having sex at a very early age. I got pregnant with my oldest daughter when I was 15. She was born a month before I turned 16. And that was a journey. Still is. She's 16 now.
Mm-hmm.
So
the experimental phase of life was still quite strong.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't really fear much, and you are now pregnant at 15. Are you able to finish high school at this point?
Yeah. So there was, I mean, it was an, that, you know, once I got pregnant, yes, I was afraid, but it was too late, you know, to not make the decisions I had made. Mm-hmm. Now there's a life inside of me. And I actually had a school nurse in Roseville High School in my freshman year who was the first one to be with me when I found out. And, you know, she goes, you know, you don't have to have an abortion. And I thought, I don't? What do you mean? Like, I can have this baby? You know, you can. It's your choice. You can if you want. And she was God sent. Her name was Mary Ann, and she's definitely a child of God. She's saved. She shared the gospel with me when I was 15 and when I was pregnant. And then there was that point where it was like, okay, but now we have to talk to your mom, tell her your mom about this. You're pregnant. Now we got to tell your mom. And that was scary. And, you know, I was told, you have to have an abortion. You can't have a baby. You're 15. You have to. My mom said I had to. And Marianne just looked at me and she said, it's your choice. It is all your choice. And so I chose to keep the baby. And I called my dad and I had told him. And I went and lived with my dad.
Beautiful choice, Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
To God be the glory, you made that choice. So, all right. Now, George, you have something? Because we're going to take a break here in a minute.
Nope.
Yeah.
No, it's absolutely stunning that God would enable a 15-year-old girl to make the right choice.
Yeah, that's incredible. And this lovely woman of God, Mary Ann, stepping up, letting you know you have a choice and there's an option.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Totally.
All right.
Totally, Bill.
We're taking a little break. We come back, lots more of Rebecca's story. So glad to have her with us tonight. If this is your first time to Real Recovery, where have you been? You can always go to Real Recovery on our page at myfaithradio.com. We have our own show page. You can hear any and all previous episodes. And this one tonight will be available at some point after the broadcast. So we'll take a short break and be right back with Rebecca. Welcome back. Rebecca's our guest. She's here with us in the studio, and quite a story, George. I can't wait to hear what happened next. So she's 16, 17, 18. She's got a baby who's now one or two, and I'm curious to find out what happened next. Rebecca, what happened?
Yeah, so moved around a lot after she was born and landed in a high school that had a daycare. You know, not knowing at the time, but God had designed it that way, and I was able to graduate high school with her.
So you take her to school with you every day?
Yep, get cool. up every morning, get her ready, go to school, bring her to the daycare, have lunch with her, go back, put her in the daycare, finish classes, and, you know, but there was that thing inside of me, right, that, like, what do you do outside of that? Well, now I'm an adult, for sure. I've got this baby, and I can drink when I please. I can do more drugs if I want. And it was, you know, just falling back on the way I was raised. And then I think that's what people mean when they talk about generational curses. Like, I was just doing what I knew how to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so after graduation, the experimentation with drugs just increased. Nothing really got better. Things just got worse as far as my drug use. Had another, my second child at 21, different father, of course. And, you know, now I'm 21. Now I can legally go out and drink and party and do whatever I'd like. And you know, in that lifestyle, when that's the act of addiction, right? So it's not like you're having any sense of normalcy. I'd have a job here at, you know, Mad Jack's, or a job here at this place. And it would last only as long as that place was willing to put up with my inconsistency and, you know, I can't find a sitter, I can't do this, like the chaos of active addiction. And I lived in that for years of my young adulthood with two little babies. And then it wasn't long after that, in 2014, I had my third baby. Okay. And it's like, okay, now I've got these three little babies and, you know, with a different man. So I've got, you know, relationship issues. I've got addiction issues. I've got, you know, all these different things going on, and I think my life is just fine. I was living an entire life of denial because that's what I was, that's what I knew.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I knew growing up, you know? There was a little, as far as like, you know, what I would think back to, you know, Marianne telling me, you know, God is here, he is real. But like, I didn't really know much more about God than, you know, than like something somebody had told me. There was no relationship with him. And so I just did what was comfortable, what I knew, and all of that was really easy. And then I found, you know, a drug is a drug is a drug, right? And I learned that after getting sober. No matter what it is, it's a mood and mind altering chemical. But at the end of my road, the one that really knocked me out was an amphetamine. It was methamphetamine. And with that, I found I was making, and not at the time, I didn't think I was making insane decisions. But, you know, it turned out like every decision I was making was leaving my kids fall to the wayside. And, you know, running off in the middle of the night to the casino, running off over here, dating this drug dealer there, and like just living this fast life full of chaos and insanity. And my kids now are growing up like seeing the same things that I saw when I was a kid. And there were people along the way that were like, you know, well, are you sure you're all right? You know, you did have that DWI when you were 21. You know, are you sure you don't have it? I'm like, I'm fine. What are you talking about? Like, we still... Life seemed for a moment in my head like manageable, and that's, you know, air quotes around that, because I wasn't homeless. I could be with somebody who had a place for my kids to sleep. And then, you know, running around and leaving them with their grandma, you know, which, you know, the one of their grandmothers, you know, and running off, but there was justification, rationalization all through that. Well, at least I'm not taking them with me everywhere, and at least they're not sleeping on different people's couches. And that was my justification for leaving my kids constantly. So at least I'm not running around with them. And, you know, it wasn't until later on that I realized, like, neither were good options, you know. Neither were good options, and there was a good option out there. I just didn't know what it was yet. And so in that last few years of my active addiction, I had gotten into some legal trouble, couple fifth-degree possessions, different stuff like that, and in and out of jail. I'd go to jail 2-3 nights, get let out, then I have to go back to court on it. Go to jail 2-3 nights, get let out, and go back to court on it. And it was like, you know, as soon as I'd hit the jail, it was time long enough to take a nap, and I was getting out and going right back to it, like, you know, and that was it was building up behind me and I didn't realize it, you know? And then before I knew it, 2018, I was pregnant again. And this time I had a pretty serious amphetamine addiction and I couldn't stop. I always said I would never get high or use with a pregnant person. And there I was, that pregnant person. I couldn't stop getting high. I didn't know how. I didn't know what had happened or how my life got here. And I'll quit when I'm 3 months. I'll quit when I'm 6 months. And I just couldn't. Couldn't stop. So then, you know, about 8 months pregnant, I ended up getting pulled over and I had a warrant out from the legal issues that were building up this entire time and going to jail again. And in jail, you know, I thought it was going to be very similar. So I'm chopping at the bit after a couple of days thinking I'm going to get back out like a racehorse behind a gate. You know, I'm like, all right, let me out. I got to get back out there and get back out there and do it. And by this time, my oldest daughter's dad and grandmother had actually taken her from me because of my constant running. And I had supervised visitation with her every other Saturday at Family Wise from 11 to 2 and would only make it half the time. Sometimes I'd be up all night and think, well, I should get a nap before I go. And then I'd sleep through the visit and wouldn't end up making it and wake up feeling like crap because I missed the visit. And so what do you do when you feel like crap and you're an addict? You got to put something on those feelings, which drove my addiction just into this deeper, darker pit, right? Now I have to get high to mask how I was feeling about myself and about my situation. But when I finally landed in Scott County Jail, 2018, like I said, I thought it was just going to be a couple days and I'd be right out. And during that time, my kids were starting, but it was fall, September 2018, and my kids were starting back in school. And I wasn't getting out. I'd go to court and they wouldn't let me out. I'd go to court and they wouldn't let me out. And all of a sudden, somebody in there told me, you know, if you go into labor, they'll let you out because they don't want to pay for the birthing costs. So being the smart addict I was, I'm rolling around in jail pretending to be in labor. And so they take me to the hospital. They said, you know, you're full of it. Go back to county. So I went back to county, you know, bummed out. Okay, well, when am I going to get out of here? And next thing I know, the very next day, there's an in-person visit for me. I'm thinking, good, it's my public defender. I'm getting out, you know. And I go into this room, and there's a woman sitting there with a clipboard, legs crossed. And she said, Rebecca, do you know who I am? I said, no. She said, my name is Jackie Humphrey. I'm with Blankety County, you know, CPS, and I've got your drug screen results in front of me. You want to talk about that? And Child Protection Services, you know, I was like, well, I ain't telling her anything about drugs, you know. And there just shouldn't be anything in there, you know, it's just marijuana and just trying to really downplay it. She said, well, I have your results in front of me, so let's try it again. And I took a deep breath, and for the first time in probably, you know, well over 5 years, I decided I was going to get honest with somebody. And I'm pregnant. The drugs are starting to wear off because I've been in jail for a little longer than normal this time. And I looked at her and I said, I can't quit. I don't know how to stop, you know, and it's embarrassing. And I cried to her and I said, I don't know what to do. I can't stop getting high. And she looked at me and she said, well, you know, if your baby's born today, you don't take it home from the hospital. And if you get out this next week, you don't go pick up your other kids. You call me. You call me right away and I'll work with you. And I said, I'll call you. I promise. I swear I'll call you. And there was something freeing about being honest that first time with somebody about, you know, saying, you know, not that I could lie to her. She had the truth in front of her, but it was something freeing that happened in that room with her. So I went back to my cell and that night, that was the turning point for me. That was when God, my heart was softened. There's a scripture, and I'm not as good as quoting scripture as my brother, but that says, you know, in your weakness, I am strong, something along those lines. And I had just been broken just enough to where I could hear God. And that was the turning point. God was able to speak to me and I was able to hear him. And I broke down. I cried and I prayed, God, help me. I don't want to live this life anymore. I can't do this anymore. I was in so much pain and I didn't know how to get out of this place that I was in. But I had this peace after praying that even though I didn't know how, that God would make a way and things would be okay. You know, and I hit my knees in that cell and it was different from that point out. And, you know, nothing was easy. I got out of jail that following Thursday and called Jackie right away. And I said, Jackie, I'm out. And I'm, you know, first time ever I'd done something that I said I was going to do, you know, and yeah. I'm like, I called you. See, I told you, I called you. And, you know, I'm, you know, what felt like moments away from giving birth to my fourth child. And, you know, I said, I want to go pick up Lexus and Skies, my younger two kids. And I couldn't pick up my oldest yet, you know, because I was still in supervised visitation restrictions with her and even more so now. But I said, I want to go pick them up. And she said, no, Rebecca, you don't go pick them up. We're going to get together. You're going to give me a couple clean UAs, you know, and we can talk about a plan. And I broke again. I started bawling and crying, and there was this pain where, like, I swore nothing would ever keep me from my kids, but here this, I was in this situation, and I couldn't go pick up my children. I couldn't go see them. I couldn't, nothing. I wasn't allowed to. So normally, in my entire life previous to this, when I'm feeling this pain and this fear, you know, I'd go get high and put something on it, you know, so I wouldn't have those feelings. But that wasn't an option for me anymore. So I don't want to deal with this pain, yet I am. I can't go get high, so what do I do? And I'm pregnant as a house, and went home to where I was staying and cried and laid in bed and prayed for comfort, for peace, for guidance. I didn't know what to do. Reached out to Paul, my brother, and he, you know, would try to help me with inspiration and talk to me and talk me through things. And, you know, I started meeting with Jackie regularly, and I was doing UAs for Child Protection Services. I was doing UAs for probation. I was doing UAs for, I had to do hair follicle tests for the supervised visitation for my oldest. You know, and I laid in bed for quite a while after that until right before my baby was born, and somebody finally came over and said, get up. I said, what do you mean? Get up. I'm like, I don't feel like it. I'm in pain and I'm emotional and this sucks and my life is, you know, whatever. And they said, well, this is what you do. You go to a meeting when you're feeling that way. So I went to my very first recovery meeting clean, very pregnant, very ashamed, very full of guilt, not knowing how I hadn't used at that point, but that I hadn't. And so there's something going on, right? But still with all of the shame and guilt for where my life had gotten me to. And it was a room that separated. They had like a first step meeting over here and a women's meeting over here. And the person I was with said, why don't you go in there with them women? And I said, I'm not going in there with all them women and tell, you know, look at me, like I'm 9 months pregnant with the meth problem. Are you kidding me? I'm not going in there, you know? And the person looked at me and said, well, then just keep doing what you've been doing. It seems to have been working. I'm like, oh, whatever. So I go in this room and, but I'm not going to share. And I got my arms folded on top of my belly and the women before me start to share their stories. Right. And this is their therapeutic value. And they each have gone through at least one thing that I had gone through. Mm-hmm. Only they were happy. And they were in this fellowship, supportive of each other, and you know, talking about God and recovery. And, you know, they get to do this and they get to do that. And by the time it got to me, I was in tears. Me too, you know?
All right, Rebecca, I think we're going to take a little break when we come back. I want to hear when it got to you what you said through all the tears. All right? Rebecca's our guest. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We've got Ryan on the board, as always. Be right back. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Awfully glad that you're with us tonight. If you missed any of this story and you just joined us, oh my, you have to go to the beginning of the podcast and hear all the details. Rebecca's telling an incredible story. We're at our first recovery meeting. Rebecca, you're 9 months pregnant and you're now in a puddle of tears and it comes your time to talk. What do you say?
Well, I didn't know what to say. You know, my first words out of my mouth were, me too, me too. And I was just a mess, just crying. And these women, they wrapped their arms around me and said, it's going to be okay. Do you have a higher power? And I just looked at them and I said, you know, I believe in God. I believe in God. I don't know anything about him. And one of the women, her name is Chelsea, she hugged me and she said, well, here's my phone number and call me. And we're going to do more meetings together and we're going to, you know, talk about God and we're going to, you know, and it's going to be okay. And I left that meeting feeling like believing that it was going to be okay for the first time, like never been clean, sober off of all substances before in my entire life since I was 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Never knowing that people who didn't use drugs and alcohol could be as happy as those people.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that God played some kind of role in that, but not knowing exactly what. And that no matter how messed up my life was at the moment, not having my other kids, not knowing if I could keep my baby, but believing then that it was going to be okay was like this newfound hope. It was like, wow, okay, things are going to be okay and I could breathe for the first time. So then from that point forward, you know, I had started going to different recovery meetings because that feeling, it was like chasing that first drug again, only it wasn't a drug. It was this feeling of hope.
Mm-hmm.
And hitting meeting after meeting after meeting. And I was acing these UAs, you know, I would do 4 or 5 meetings a week. And then do my UAs. And then all of a sudden, you know, Jackie, the child protection worker, she said, you know, when you go into labor, you call me. I have to be there. So went into labor and called Jackie and, you know, had called Paul as well, my brother. And he came down to the hospital and he knew the circumstances that I was in as far as whether or not I was going to bring home my baby or not. And, you know, Paul, my brother's a vegetarian, right? So, you know, we had vegetarian pizza and it was this whole big thing. And he sat down next to me though and we prayed before the baby was born. And he, you know, I knew that there was a chance that my baby could be born and I wouldn't be able to take him home. That he would probably have drugs in his system. They say the baby's first poop. Any use after 28 weeks gestation or pregnancy, any drugs used are detected in the baby's first poop.
Mm-hmm.
And I was well past that the last time I had used. So my baby's born. I've got this lovely support group there, including my child protection worker. And they test them. Paul and I sat down and prayed. And, I got the results back, and my baby was born clean. And wow. It was like...
Miracle.
It was an absolute miracle. And, you know, God's in the miracle business. And those miracles haven't stopped every day since. So I got to take my baby home from the hospital. I started going to the Celebrate Recovery meeting with my brother. Started learning more about God. Got my other children back. Got to have visits with my oldest child outside of supervision after enough hair follicle test. And just, you know, the more I got to know God, the more miracles I seen. And the more I was able to look back and realize, like, he's been doing these miracles long before I ever started seeing him. You know, he's doing miracles and keeping me safe as a little girl.
Constantly working behind the scenes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He was doing miracles, protecting my child before it was born from the drug substance use, protecting my first child from abortion, you know, all these, you know, so the closer I got to God and the more developed relationship I had with him, the more I seen like he's always been there. He's always been there watching me, protecting me to bring me to where I am today, which, you know, fast forward, I've got a 16-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 3-year-old, and they all live in my house. I've got a career on a salary that is enough to support me and my children, you know? And, you know, when I think about it and I hear and see other people's lives unfolding and stuff like that, you know, and I look back even to my mom as a single parent with 4 children, you know, there's no way that, you know, a single mom can raise 4 kids on her own and make it and be comfortable. But it's God's fruit, you know. I put in the work and I stay faithful to him and he stays faithful to me. And I don't have to worry about those things.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, he's got it under control. I'm a leader in my church ministry, transformation ministry. You know, like I said, active in all of my kids' life. They all live with me. September 2nd this year, I'll have 4 years clean.
It's overwhelming. George, I know you've got comments.
I never get tired of hearing what God does. And as this story was going along, I was thinking, okay, this has to turn out good, right? And I didn't know. I know that you're here, but it's astounding that you had the strength. I know it's God supplied. You're very impressive what you've done. I just don't have any other word for that. To hang in there and to turn it over to God and get with a bunch of people that are doing the deal and getting honest. It really helps everybody who hears it, including me. So thank you very much. What a great story.
It's an amazing story. Rebecca, talk and encourage listeners who might be in a boat that says, I haven't been to my meeting. I haven't been to a meeting. I'm using. I need to change. How do you get to that first meeting?
Yeah, man, reach out. I've heard people describe it as the 10,000-pound telephone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my journey of staying clean throughout this process hasn't always been simple. It's not like, you know, I just wake up every day and things are great. Like, there's moments that I have to push through even today, you know, where I might start to feel complacent or start to feel low, you know. Call somebody, stay connected. You know, George, I talked about strength. Like, most days I have to really draw all of my strength from the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
I have to pray for that specifically. And if there's one thing that I've learned throughout this journey is that he answers my prayers.
Yeah, this has been an amazing, amazing story. And Rebecca, thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. It's just been a blessing.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, Georgie boy, that wraps up another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Any parting thoughts?
Rebecca, thank you, and come back and see us in about a year.
That'd be fantastic.
Keep up with you.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks for listening to our show tonight. Thank you for supporting Faith Radio. We just love spending this time with you. Have a great night, and we'll see you next time.
But I continue learning. I never meant to do those things to you. And so I have to say before I go.
Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.